Hello, listeners. This is KDRT LP 95.7 here in Davis, California. My name is Lois Richter. My program is called That's Life. And today I have with me a guest who I don't know. In fact, I've never even met this fellow. Well, except online. So my guest today is named Rupert McCrae, and I met him through this wonderful community of people who make videos, do audio, do production, that sort of stuff. It's called Office Hours and After Hours. So hello, Rupert.
Oh, it's great to be with you. Hello. Thanks for having me on.
Well, I'm really glad that you, I'm glad you agreed to come on with me. But why don't you tell our listeners just a little bit about you so that they get, you know, a little bit to know. They won't see a picture because it's radio, but talk to us.
Sure. So, I mean, like you said, we've met through Office Hours, and that's a community I've been involved in for a little over a year now. My background is as a technician and an engineer and a manager in corporate life and things like that. And I'm based here in Dallas, Texas, or like I say, globally worldwide now, because it's sort of the remote way we're working these days sort of closed a lot of boundaries and made the world a much smaller place. But I'm originally from near London in England. And I moved to Texas, the US and Texas, about 12 years ago, first of all into Houston and then into Dallas. And I've been, you know, working in technical fields, I guess, for 25 years now. Originally, I had an apprenticeship in the electrical industry, and just one way or another, traveled through some different technical fields and areas of life, and moved to a different country, and I've worked in different projects in different regions of the world. So meandering journey that brought us together, but still pleased to be here.
I see that you have a young face. You're not retired, are you?
I am not. No, I don't know how young I look or I'm supposed to look. But
well, how old are you?
I will be 42 next year. Yeah, I really have to think about it these days.
Mine is easy. I was born in 1950. It ends in a zero, so you always know when it is. And I was a January birth, so it's like really easy.
Yeah, so I'm the same. I was born in 1980, so it's a sort of round number. So I, in fact, I just turned 41.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So not retired. Not retired. I'm, you know, like I say, I'm 25 years into, you know, my career, as it were. You know, I've been working that amount of years, and you know, I'm not really sort of focused on too much about retirement or anything like that. I'm just focused on moving forward. And
you got 25 years to go before it's time for you to retire.
Right.
So are you working for yourself, or are you working for a company, or you do higher up projects?
So for the past few months, I've been working on a freelance basis in the technology space and all around the remote work and the collaboration tools. That's, you know, all the things that are helping us through the past couple of years, and you know, that we're trying to develop moving forward, you know, for audio visual, you know, things like we discuss in Office Hours, or just more audio formats like we're using right now, but just engineering those tools and those processes for anybody who needs help with that. But prior to that, I was in a corporate position, and you know, I've had different corporate roles, and over the years, I've had other periods of being freelance. I had operated under my own sort of umbrella for several years in the UK, and so I've had a blended background. But yeah, right now freelance, which I think is so much of what we're doing right now, is about flexibility and adapting quickly. So I'm finding at the moment that works quite well.
So have you done anything that your name would appear on, like the list of editors or contributors or stuff, or produced something that we might have seen? Have we seen your name somewhere?
Well, certainly. I mean, in Office Hours, I've probably, my name is maybe one of the prominent ones in terms of I often appear on the panel in Office Hours, and if I'm not there, I'm trying to answer, you know, questions that might come up. I'm in the background contributing either, you know, research material that comes up as questions into office hours, and then, you know, online and into, you know, social media, things like LinkedIn. I'm trying to I do post, you know, things on there that I think are relevant to where we are and where we're going in terms of, you know, my areas of collaboration and audiovisual communication and tools and things like that. So I try to keep active, you know, in that space.
So my listeners are mostly here in Davis, California, and many of them wouldn't even know what office hours is. You know, I think that was a pretty obscure thing when I found it. I actually found it because I was looking for Zoom training, eventually found Zoom Test Kitchen. People told about office hours, then about after hours. So it's like I've been sort of sliding into the community in the last few months. But would you please tell us what office hours is and how people find out more about it? Or I guess maybe just, what's the URL? What's the link? How do you get there?
So yeah, Office Hours has a website, and that is officehours.global. So it's not a .com in that case. It's officehours.global is the URL. And I'm just a member, so I can talk about it from a member's point of view. Not with any necessary authority, but it's a community of it's at the core, I guess, is technicians all around the audiovisual space and event production, you know, things all around that area, or media, what they call media productions. There's a lot of film and TV expertise in there, and there's a great community of people who are really there to help navigate the group, but also the, you know, anybody who comes along and follows the community, to help everybody navigate through the remote work models that we have now. So it's a core, it's an expert community, but it attracts a wider audience of anybody who either has an interest in those fields or feels that they need to get a grip on some of those technologies or needs help through it.
And I will expand on that a little bit. Office Hours was started and is owned by Alex Lindsay. And he's an instigator, but you know, for owning the thing, he doesn't take over. It's not like the Alex Lindsay show. This is every morning at 7 a.m. Pacific time. There is a gathering on Zoom, and that's a Zoom webinar. So people can come in to it and they can ask questions. They can be, he calls the audience producers, because they get to drive the show by what questions they ask, and then by voting up and down the questions that other people ask, so that the things that most people are interested in get handled first. So if you wanted to, for example, be doing a radio show and you were curious about what microphone should I use or how should I make my setup to be most efficient or whatever, you could go in, as I did, and say, hi guys, what have you got? What can you tell me? Tell me about microphones. And that is a perfectly fine way to become involved with Office Hours. They have a panel that there's a probably between 9 and 12 people every day, different people, different days, and those folks can answer your questions. So it's an excellent thing, and if you get sucked into the community, there's always more going on.
And there's such a mix too, you know, because there's a lot of expertise there in the community, and particularly a lot of days on the panel. But the subject matter of the day, or the questions that come up, or the people that come in there, you know, asking questions or looking for help, can be about all kinds of things for all mm-hmm. different types of reasons. You know, you've got people in there asking questions about, you know, their professional event or their professional, you know, company, whatever. But also people coming in there saying, hey, look, we're trying to put together a family, you know, Zoom for the holidays, or, you know, we've got to do this or that, and how can it work, or we did it and it failed, and what can we do next time? And yeah. So for all different kinds of reasons and what we would call use cases, you know.
The office hours has been going well since the pandemic, and it has spun off some other things. So just in December, I was on the Tony Mobley Show, conversationswithtonymobley.com. And yes, you can go there and you can see me. I know you never see me because we're on radio, but you can see me. Anyway, so that was a spinoff, and there are people in the community who are being the crew to manage and run the Tony Mobley Show. And then there's the cooking show, and that's a wonderful one. There's people from all over the world learning how to cook a dish. So everybody's in their own kitchen, and one of them is instructing on what's happening, and everybody's following along. It's really fascinating. It has nothing to do with technology, but there is technology behind it. And so the community is involved in producing that show. And there's a lot of other things that go on too. But anyway, if you want to find out more, go to officehours.global. Check it out. Maybe we'll see you there sometime. Okay. A spinoff on after office hours is when there's not a webinar show going. There is a Zoom meeting going called After Hours. And since it goes all the time that office hours isn't on, it's like 20 hours a day at least, and it's a drop-in. Anybody who knows the link can come in at any time, and there are people from all over the world. So it's like, well, in the morning we've got the Brits, and then we got the U.S. stuff in the middle, what for me is the middle of the day. And then by the time you get down to the evening, well, then the Australian folks, the New Zealand folks, those folks are there. And it's like, whenever you come in, there's people to talk to ask questions of, to share what you're doing, to get feedback on things. It's really cool.
Yeah, after hours was a real change in direction, but a real step in the evolution, I think, of office hours, because prior to that, and in addition to the Zoom webinar that you've talked about, that the sessions are recorded, the main office hours sessions are recorded and put on YouTube. And at some point, I forget exactly when it was, but even before After Hours existed, there was a separate short meeting held before office hours, and that was referred to as the pre-show. And then that was extended to, like, I think what was called the pre-show. So they had this little meeting before office hours, and then there was a separate spin-off called the post-show, which was a short meeting after office hours. And then, you know, it just got to the point where, again, I'm not speaking sort of necessarily with authority, just as my experience having grown through it, then that just extended to, well, why don't we just have a meeting that runs all the time when office hours isn't, you know, running itself? Mm-hmm. And it's a fascinating phenomenon. I think one of the things about office hours in general is it's not necessarily heavily publicized, or it's not certainly not commercialized, and so it takes a certain type of curiosity to find it. You know, it's generally curious people who are, you know, looking for something or an answer to a question. So I think that's what helps generate a lot of the creativity that we see in many of the, well, in the discussion just generally, and then in the spin-off projects as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so you sound like you've been in office hours a long time. Before office hours existed, or before you were in it, where would you go to ask questions, or who would ask you questions?
Well, I mean, I've been in technology fields for 25 years, so I'm quite often the, you know, the person that gets asked a lot of questions, you know, so mm-hmm. it was... that's a sort of skill, I guess, I've honed over the years, you know, helping people with their questions or, you know, problems or solutions to whatever they need. But I mean, I have gone in the past is actually by the standards we have today through office hours, now seems so limited in the resources that one's had. I mean, okay, sure, you can start Googling stuff or trying to think of the people, you know, in your network or from your past, or you could call to get an opinion on something. But by today's standards, all of those things seem so slow and arduous. You know, mm-hmm. Now we have this this community. But even having said that, over the course of my career so far, I've been lucky enough to have encountered some really knowledgeable, wise experts in fields. So there are, of course, people and places you can go to get answers and support and guidance on things, but nothing that comes close to the power of Office Hours, really.
And how did you get involved with Office Hours?
Yeah, it's a good question. So I think I came in about 18 months ago, something like that. And I was there were several podcasts, I guess, or regular online things that I tried to keep tuned into. A lot of them come out on Twit, the Twit network. And I think it was probably through that I saw one of Alex Lindsay's shows. He's on the MacBreak Weekly program on Twit, and I think he probably mentioned it there. And it was, of course, in the early stages of lockdown, where a lot of people were thinking about cameras and Zoom and, trying to get these things connected. So I think if you're online looking for information about those things, it probably isn't long until you bump into Office Hours if those are the things you're searching for. And I think that's where I was at that time. Again, that was when I was in a corporate role, and we were trying to, get to grips with, okay, how are we going to work remotely? How are we going to see each other, hear each other, all that kind of stuff. So it was just a connection to some, people I already followed, like through the Twit network specifically.
You're saying Twit. Is that Twitter, Twitch, or a third thing?
Twit. So Twit, T-W-I-T. Twit is a podcasting network. Twit, I think, originally stood for This Week in Technology. That, I think, was probably one of their original programs, and I can't speak so knowledgeably about that, but they then since expanded to have many different podcasts, or I guess you could say channels, so it's a whole network now of different shows. So there's one, the show that Alex Lindsay is host on is Mac Break Weekly, all about the Mac and Apple ecosystem. And there's another one about Windows PC ecosystem, and there's all kinds of different shows on there about different areas of technology. So it's mm-hmm. And I think most shows are weekly, so it's very much around that This Week in Technology type.
And when you got involved with the Office Hours, were you hiding in the background for a long time, or were you going, oh, I could be a panelist, and jumping right in?
I wouldn't say hiding in the background. I was certainly observing. I think one of the things about Office Hours that anybody might find is it's a very nutrient rich environment. It's lots, there's not much dead air in Office Hours. So when I first encountered Office Hours, the back catalog is all on YouTube. So at whatever point you discover Office Hours, there's a huge amount of backstory there to explore, and all these episodes. I mean, it's a daily show, 2 hours a day. So there's a lot of great content there. And I think a lot of people who find Office Hours for the first time get, excited, and they get,
overwhelmed.
Maybe overwhelmed, maybe, but certainly stimulated, let's say, by all that information and just the pace. And that's one thing that really Alex has done a fantastic job of, is setting the standards for the pace of conversation and making sure that the listeners or watchers' time doesn't get wasted, which I think shows the audience a great respect, really. So I was soaking up a lot of that back catalog for a long time, just getting acclimated or acquainted with the culture and the information that was available in the community, and then started submitting questions, not necessarily on things that I needed to know, although there was some helpful tips there, but also things that maybe I was seeing in the news or that I was interested to hear second opinions on, or try and get an insider's view or an outsider's view. So that's kind of where my question submitting came from for me.
And then I assume that you were hearing questions and going, oh, I know the answer to that. Oh, I can't say anything, I'm not on the panel. And eventually you got on the panel, right?
Yeah, more or less. That's pretty much how it happened. Yeah. I mean, it's funny, really, because I think some people go through that and think that they don't, necessarily have the answers to some of these questions. Mm-hmm. And that's, I don't think any one person does or could, but the conversation the breadth and scope of questions sort of expands to where, well, if you're in the community, chances are you'll have some perspective, opinion, mm-hmm. or view on any question that might come up, really.
So my experience with getting into office hours, as I say, I was on the Zoom test kitchen, and I was quite active there and asked questions and talked to people and, you know, stuff. And several of the people there, including Tomi Mobley, said, you really should go to office hours. You really should. It would be wonderful. So I did that. And the first time I did that, I went and I looked at it, and there was a bunch of people on screen, and I wanted to ask a question. So I raised my hand. So they put me on the panel. And it's like, I had no clue how any of this stuff worked, but they were very kind and tried to help me figure out how to get on something called Makana, and then something called, oh, I don't know, whatever that other thing is
Discord.
Yeah. And it's like, this is during the pre-show, and it's time for mic checks and all that stuff. And yet they're going kindly and helping. And then explained that you put your hand up to get on the panel and be one of the experts to answer things. And I went, oh, that's not me. So they showed me how to put my hand up and get made an audience member, which Alex calls producers, because you can ask questions and then get all. So anyway, it was then a few times that I was just listening, as you say, pretty soon, one of my friends said, Lois, why don't you be on the panel? I mean, you ask good questions over in Zoom test kitchen. I thought, oh, well, okay, why not? So I did. And a lot of the questions that come into that are very highly technical. They're, this machine, does it connect with that machine? Which type of mix do you have? What are the dBs? And what are the... And it's always way over my head. But there have been times when people have talked about things that my experience is appropriate. So I've done radio shows, TV shows, set design. You know, I have some experience, just not the current high-tech mechanical parts. So anyway, eventually I started switching, which in the modern term is cutting. Now, when we were doing television shows, it was always switching. You were in the control room, we're switching from this camera to that camera to the B-roll to whatever. And so now occasionally, in fact, most Mondays, I go in and I cut for office hours.
And I think that, you know, all the protocols that you've talked about in terms of the, you know, the things we follow for how we get people into and out of the show and the raising hands and all those things. And the fact that we do mic check, these are all good show protocol type things. And since the whole thing is on Zoom, a lot of those things actually lead to a much better set of discipline for, you know, making just a Zoom experience a good one. Office hours has always been on through Zoom, although it's, you know, cast on YouTube as well. And, you know, Zoom's of course used all over the place in business and personal lives, education, especially. And, you know, a lot of those experiences and those meetings that other people are having are less than ideal, let's say. And it's easy to pick up some things from office hours and take those and use them elsewhere, you know, in your personal meetings at Zoom or in your school, you know, education, working mm-hmm. from home, whatever. So it's not just about the sort of questions that get answered in office hours, but it's something about the overall Zoom experience that I think is of value to mm-hmm. anybody who's there to witness it.
And some of the topics are less mechanical and more perspective.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And I think sometimes the questions are perhaps formed by who the producers or the audience see on the panel that day. You know,
that's true.
Oh, you know, okay, you know, there's Bob and Jane are on today. I know that they are experts in this. That's the day or the time to ask my question. So
yeah,
the thing that keeps the subject matter growing is the, you know, expanding knowledge and mm-hmm. expertise and backgrounds of the new panel members who do join.
Right. And then there's always the fact that the community, and I do call it a community, gets to know each other in after hours. So even if you don't want your face shown on screen and you will never be a panelist, you can still come to after hours and ask questions or answer questions or participate without showing your face. And it works just fine. And then people get to know what other folks are doing. And so I'm expecting that the next time that I'm on office hours, which will be next Monday, I'm expecting one of the people in the community is going to ask me about, well, how are you doing on that birding project? You know, and because they know that that's something that I'm working on or I'm interested or whatever. So it's a place where occasionally newcomers might go, ooh, lots of in-jokes. And that's true, because as the community knows each other, then we know what to ask about. Well, one of the things I asked about was, is anybody in here willing to be on my radio show? And Rupert popped up and said, I'll do it. So thank you, Rupert, for coming on here.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for having me. And that maybe that's a bit of an insight into sort of my, you know, where I come from on these things. I'm quite often the sort of first to volunteer for things, or, you know, put my hand up, or even in, you know, the traditional, you know, business sense of in meetings and things. And I always remember people's presentations, people asking, are there any questions? And I often remember being in rooms where nobody would ask any questions, you know, and I'd be the one, okay, well, I'll come up with some questions. Let's get the discussion going.
You sound like me in the sense of it's really hard for me to say no to somebody. You know, if somebody needs some help and they ask me for it, I'm probably going to do it, really? Which occasionally gets you a little hectic.
Yeah, that's sometimes some of the wisdom that comes through and some of the answers that come up on office hours, you know, of how to say no to things or and not to get involved, or there are those things also.
Yeah. Okay, so back to what you are doing. You talked about your career and you're currently freelancing and working on projects. I'm assuming we're not going to talk about those specific projects, but what do you do outside of your career, office hours, and after hours? What else you got going?
Well, I often say when people ask me that question, I like to make a mess in the kitchen. So,
are you going to be on the cooking show anytime soon?
I did participate in one of the early pilots in the the early experimentation, let's say, in the office hours cooking format, just to get a feeling for you know, what it takes to set up that kind of equipment and to actually do that, and then also cook and stuff like that. So, but I do like to dabble in the kitchen. And
any particular recipe you want to share?
I like doing roast potatoes, which is, you know, partially boiled potatoes and then finished in the oven, ideally in sort of some nice kind of goose fat or something like that, but to where they get, you know, really nice and crispy and but get fluffy on the inside. That's a good hearty kind of thing to have in winter time. So maybe I'll
Well, I like potato skins. That's my preference for potatoes. And my husband likes mashed potatoes, and that's his preference. Well, that's pretty good, because you can cook up a potato and then cut it in half and take the inside out and mash it and keep the outside, and you got some skins. But that's easy. Yeah. We've done that for years. Recently, I saw someone doing something on the TV, and they had very, very small potatoes. And they just cut them in half and tossed them in a little bit of oil and salt, put them face down on a baking sheet, and put them in the oven and slow roasted them until they were done. And it was like having a miniature potato skin, because they were so small that you've got the skin in the back, you got that wonderful crunchy front, and there's very little potato in the middle. But it was great. I loved them, but I didn't get mashed potatoes for my husband. So what I did is I modified this. I take a nice big russet potato and I slice off a fairly thin flat side. And that's going to become my little fried up potato skin. I do that on all four sides. So I've got those. And then of course you got to do the ends, because I take the skin off. And then I do my stuff for the outsides. And I take that potato and I simply put it in the microwave for 5 minutes. It comes out perfect. Can mash it. There you go. We're both happy.
Yeah, it's interesting. So one has one's favorites and methods for doing things and in the kitchen, let's say. But I cannot follow a recipe. Recipes give me a panic attack. It's just trying to, you know, follow. I mean, I have some repeatable things that I do, you know, and I have ways of throwing things together. But, you know, when I have to actually follow some prescribed formula, you know, in the exact order that I don't do many desserts because you have to be so accurate, mainly with baking and all that kind of stuff. My wife often asks me, oh, how did you do that? Or what was that? And can we do that again? I don't know. I just was in the kitchen for 45 minutes and this is what happened.
Well, in my opinion, cooking is free form. Yes. Baking, you have to follow the recipes because of the proportions. And, you know, it's really easy to fail with a cake. You know? Yeah. So, but if I'm cooking potatoes, there's really no fail unless I burn them. So right. What the heck? I can try anything.
And then I just call that rustic.
Well, I look at the fact that it cost me 54 cents to buy the potato and I throw it out and do it over again.
Right.
I can afford 54 cents.
Yeah, although I really do dislike wasting food. You know, I do like to cook and I don't like to throw anything away.
So. Yeah. Well, we have an automatic composting system in our town. They issued every household a compost bin. And so you can put in it, you know, leaves from the yard or potato peels or whatever you've got that's compostable. And then they take it and it's composted. So it's very nice. It's nice to have that system.
It's not only just the waste of, you know, that I don't like, but it's all the, you know, through cooking in the kitchen or the, putting the time and even the love into the food, you know, you just hate to see that sort of go to waste, you know.
It's very rare that I actually throw out food. I mean, occasionally there'll be something in the fridge too long and it's no longer edible, so that's got to go. But it's been years since I've burnt a potato. Though I do agree, I do like a rustic, a little brown, but just not charcoal.
I borrowed that line from a movie, but I just cannot remember what movie that came from. It's in there somewhere.
Okay, what would you like to talk about? What would you like to tell me about? You got any hobbies? You got any family you want to brag on? You got any plans? Whatever you want.
Yeah, so I mean, plans seem difficult to comprehend these days because things change so rapidly. Yeah. But we have a teenager in college, halfway through a musical performance, vocal performance and musical education degree. So that keeps us busy in terms of logistics and, you know, keeping on top of things he needs or when he's coming home and when he's not, trying to then keep on top of his social life or his schedule, I should say. So that keeps us busy. And then I have my parents are in the UK where I'm from in my hometown. So I spent some time keeping in contact with them. And so I've been doing that all the while that I've been here in the US, but here recently there's been more of a, you know, a push towards Zoom and doing more of a camera and things like that. So it's nice to obviously keep in touch with family. Luckily they don't have to sort of move around too much, so they're able to stay, they've been able to, you know, stay relatively still and isolated, relatively speaking.
Have they got people who can shop for them, or do they live in a place where they have all food?
It's all delivered. The UK has actually been far ahead on the like home grocery delivery path the US is. That's been a thing there for, I don't know, 15 years that you can get your groceries delivered next day. So luckily they're
we have that here too. And when the pandemic first started, we didn't know what was going on. Nobody knew what was going on. Nobody knew how it was transmitted, what was going on, any of that. So we started by getting the local grocery store to deliver. And it was one of those things where you go on the app, you pick out what you want, they deliver. If they don't have this, then you can say exchange is okay or not. And we did that for a while. But our community, it's a university town, and the university early on started doing research on how to test for COVID. And they developed this spit test. And so they had everybody on campus, all the students, staff, workers, tested. And then when the vaccines came out, they all got vaccines, and they formed a thing called Healthy Davis Together. And so then they invited the residents of Davis who were not connected to the university to participate. And so our test rate and our vaccination rate in our town is just super high because we had this resource early on. So we've been going to the grocery store for 6 months at least, maybe more, and our local stores have senior hours or people with compromised immune systems or something. And so they open early and they just only those people come in. So it's very sparse. You're not in a giant crowd or anything. And so, you know, we were doing that for a long time. So it's been good in our town. Our town has been lucky.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting just in the sort of life, the pathway through all these things. I think there are some things or adjustments that we've made or we've seen that are actually this is quite nice. You know, it's nicer to go to, you know, places when they're less crowded, or, you know, there are some things which might be quite pleasant if they sort of stayed around.
Yeah.
You know,
well, the whole Zoom experience has been an eye opener. Of course, I never even had heard about this before. Everything went sideways. And the exercise program that was in our senior center, and three times a week we'd go in and exercise with this wonderful trainer. Her name is Debbie Earnessy. And then when the senior center shut down, it was like, what are we going to do? So I helped Debbie find, we looked around, we decided Zoom was the thing. So I helped her get set up and start doing that. And then all these seniors that were participating, well, they had to learn how to use Zoom too. And so that was the first few months I was really busy teaching, basically. Yeah. And it has worked beautifully. And it's something that we're not going back, because when you're on Zoom with this, she got a big screen panel on the wall. So she has all of the pictures of the participants and she can see what they're doing. Whereas it used to be, we were in a giant room, you know, she was in one spot, she could say maybe five or six people and everybody else was outside her view. Well, now she knows exactly when someone hasn't quite got it. And so she can change the cues or she can say, oh, not this, this. And, you know, it's wonderful. So it's working really well.
And I was actually talking to somebody about this yesterday. You know, I've been around technology a long time now, and I've never seen anything go backwards. You know, here we are having adopted all this technology and found these new ways to connect and interact and things like that. And I think you're right. That's not going back in the box. You know, find a new level somewhere. But
for some things like the exercise class definitely isn't going back. The genealogy club, which has been doing presentations by Zoom now for the last year and a half, is doing well with the Zoom presentations. But there are a lot of the members who are, well, genealogists tend to be older people. And there's a lot of them who aren't interested in looking at a Zoom thing. They want to see the real people. They want to talk. And so there's probably going to be a going back in for that club, or at least partially. And it's like there's a whole discussion about the, can we do a hybrid? How do we do this? Do we have, it's really complicated. And then the third one I'm really active in is the Quaker meeting. Now, I don't know if you know anything about Quakers, but our meeting for worship is silent until somebody has something to say, and then they stand up and they give their ministry. So here we've got 30 screens on Zoom, absolutely silent for an hour. But, you know, it's what we can do. That is definitely going back to the real world as soon as it's safe to do so.
Right.
It's a much different experience.
Interestingly, this similar thing can sometimes happen in after hours. It can hit going back to the office hours community, but after hours can be a hive of activity sometimes, but then it can find a quiet period. But there's people there, people listening, people maybe on camera, maybe not. And, you know, sometimes just takes a key word and it'll spark off a conversation. But in terms of where things may go or back to normal, whatever, I was meeting with some folks here at a local music, not even a music venue. It's actually a music store that has a performing space attached to it. And so they're very well connected to the local musician community and they have people come in and, you know, buy and repair their instruments, whatever, and then they'll invite a touring artist to come and perform, and then do a workshop and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And they very, very much an in-person type business. And of course, during the lockdown, they adapted to connect with their community online, you know, through Zoom or whatever they were using. Mm-hmm. And so they found new audiences, you know, they were opening their doors wider than mm-hmm. they'd been before. They really now can't see a way that they can exclude those people. You know, if they reopen their front doors here, which they are doing slowly, then how do they turn their new audiences, online audiences, away? They don't want to do that. So they want to keep engaged with both communities.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's going to be hard. But that's not going to happen for quite a while, it seems. I thought we were getting close to going back to being in person, but it's just reversed itself now. It's not going to happen for a while. But let's talk about happier things. I'm looking at you, and I'm looking at your background, and it is beautiful. I'm sorry that the folks on the radio can't see this. I'll try and describe it. He has a wall behind him. He's not flush flat to the wall. He's sort of at an angle. So you've got a wall, then there's a little bit of a corner than you can see. And he has these nice framed pictures all along the wall. Then down below that, there's a desk type area, a table or whatever. And below that are clear plastic storage bins. But the really cool thing is that very little is lit. The storage bins all have this blue color on them, so they sort of fade behind him. It's very nice. And then he's got a couple little pops of light to show off, like the Texas picture. And then in the corner, he has a little monitor that's got an ocean scene or something like that. And so it's a very nice, subtle, but interesting background. And when people do Zoom, you can get everything from mine, which is just the shelves behind me, and they're got artwork on them, so they're okay, but they're not clearly separate from myself. My hair and my face and things sort of merge into the background, whereas Rupert's, oh my, he is so well lit, and he is so well distinct, and yet it's not a flat gray, blue, white, whatever, that a lot of people use. So I'm sorry y'all can't hear that. I mean, you can hear it but not see it. Rupert, have you produced any videos that they can go and look at? Have you ever been on, office hours?
I am there a lot of the time, and yeah, you can certainly see there what you've described, although it has been an evolution, you know, over my time on, just on my time on office hours, I've kind of, fine-tuned the at least the appearance. I haven't changed the layout, the physical mm-hmm. layout of things so much, because that was something I'd worked on even before office hours, but it did have to at least change some of the lighting, like you've mentioned. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that is on office hours. And, you know, we do on there talk about, I guess we critique each other maybe on what looks good on camera, because sometimes you can work on your environment, you know, just to be, you know, pleasing to be in, and it just it comes across differently. You have to present it differently to look good on camera.
He is politely referring to the fact that for the last month and a half or so, I've been trying to figure out a way to separate my face from a background and yet have it look good and yet not go out and buy a bunch of stuff. And I'm in the middle of the living room. I can't leave a studio set up all the time. So it's been an interesting journey. And this winter, I am going to move my space where I do my Zoom stuff into another room. And right now it is an art room, a storage room, you know, a bunch of stuff. So I'm going to have to like clean it all out, but then I'll be able to go in there, have two monitors instead of one, have a set that is set up all the time. And I think I will have enough lighting, then I will be able to adjust the lighting as I go. So it'll be a different look eventually, but you know, I think it's more important what people say than what they look like. So I'm perfectly happy to be where I am.
Yeah, I've sometimes said that the on office hours, sometimes I've said the room is the star of the show. I'm just happened to be here saying something also. You know?
And for me, I would love to tilt my camera so you barely saw my face, and you'd see above me all my artwork as it goes up to the ceiling. Only that doesn't match what everybody else looks like. So we'll work on it.
Yeah, you know, this space also, my space here also evolved before Zoom or before, you know, lockdown or all that. It started a little while back. I took a severance package from a previous position and like, okay, need a workspace, you know. And so we started working on this room, I guess, this office. And then wasn't long after that I had to do a bit of a changing course to make it all sort of Zoom Zoom friendly, because mm-hmm. that's the way we were going. So it's mm-hmm. it's evolved like many other things.
And if anyone on here who's listening to us is interested in finding out how to do that, or what lights look good, or, you know, how do you get the glare off your glasses, or all that sort of stuff, you can go to Zoom Test Kitchen. You can go to Office Hours. There's a lot of people out there with a lot of expertise and experiences that are very happy to share.
I think it, sort of people, you know, fine tune it to maybe a high degree or whatever, but mm-hmm. I think, you know, just from a wider perspective, I think, you know, if we are going to do these things remotely and even interact with family remotely or whatever it is, that actually, if you sort of put some thought into it, it can actually lead to some, mm-hmm. you know, pretty good experiences.
Yeah. Well, I did not expect this to be a radio show about office hours, but it seems to have been what we've turned into. So let's divert ourselves. You live in Dallas.
Yes.
And you have obviously got a house, otherwise you wouldn't have an office in a room in a house. Do you do a lot of gardening? Do you do bird watching? Do you do backyard grilling? What do you do?
No, so I'm not much of a gardener. Maybe I'm not sure I have the patience for it. but I have just done a nice Christmas light display in the front yard. So I do like to decorate from if I can sort of. I can bring some engineering to something, then I generally get involved in it. So decorating, that we do a good job of, you know, decorating the house at Christmas and for other holidays and things like that. And I like to keep up with movies when I can. And mm-hmm. that's just been a less frequent occurrence recently, you know, going to the movies. I used to be part of like movie clubs or photography clubs, even back in the day.
You do photography?
I used to, never sort of taken it seriously. I was more the opportunistic photographer and more about capturing a moment or a clever shot, you know, in a picture. Just, I never went crazy with the equipment and all the science of it, but just trying to, you know, capture a message in a picture. I was, mm-hmm. I still do that. I was always, you know, always like to crop out the interesting part of a picture or find an interesting message in an image.
Yeah, my brother was always the technophile in the family, and he always knew exactly what the equipment did and what all the numbers were. And I mean, he's the kind of guy who, when they went camping, before they went to bed, he would figure out what angle he was going to shoot the sunrise from to get that tree just in the corner, you know, and get, it's like, oh, come on, man. Right. I'm the more the kind who would walk along and see something beautiful and went, oh, wow, look at that. I wish I could share it with somebody. And if I happen to have a camera, I'd take a picture. Right. More recently, I've gotten into, you know, I have 40,000 photos on the computer, most of which are not worth much, but it's fun to take a photo and then mess with it on the computer. Mm-hmm. And I really enjoy doing that. So I've been doing that for a few years. Do you ever mess with your pictures on the computer?
What I do in that way is I sort of reverse mess with, I do this quite often in hotels. If I see an interesting picture on the wall or see an artwork or something at an angle, let's say, or I'll get the best picture of it I can. And then I'll bring it into the computer and then try and straighten it up. Turn it into something else completely, then I have a story behind it. You know, I can mm-hmm. say, you know, this now looks like this thing on my computer, but actually that was taken in a hotel lobby and, you know, wherever, whatever, and mm-hmm. have some story behind it. So I sort of mm-hmm. reverse engineer them.
Tidying up.
Right. Yeah. I bought this a rolling scanner. So like where you might have a scanner to scan a picture or something like that. It's a bit like a rolling pin. And so I think I've done it in hotels. It's probably the place I've done this. I've got some nice picture hanging that is firmly attached to the wall. And you can actually like put the scanner on it and slowly swipe it down. And that just gives me just captures the memory. I'm not reproducing the work.
To remember it, yeah.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Well, those rolling scanners work wonderfully for long documents, too. Yep. Something that's not going to fit on your little scanner. I do genealogy and family history stuff. And so there are times when you have a large document, you've gone to some public place and you're looking at the archives and you have this thing, but you can't take it out. You can't, it's not small enough to fit on a scanner. And so a phone with a camera is a wonderful tool. But if you have one of those rolling scanners, you can actually get long documents too. So that's a great tool.
Yeah. In fact, one of these pictures that you see hanging behind me, I mean, it isn't really that big, but there's one back there that's maybe 3 feet wide in the frame. And that was something a while back that for one reason or another, I thought I would need to get a copy made of it. And I was looking at ways to do that without unframing it. And that turned into quite the research project of how to get that done. And I started talking to some folks and local repro shops here. And what, for one reason or another, like one, they couldn't do it or their machine was broken. And they kept referring me to saying, oh yeah, you should go to such and such shop, you know, and finally track these people down. And this old reprographics house, and the guy there said, oh yeah, yeah, we can do that. He led me through the back rooms of his facility there and showed me this machine, you know, for capturing large prints, you know, large images to reproduce them. You know, I guess it's some kind of motorized camera rig system, but most fascinating. It was just an interesting story about, I like to have stories about the things around me. You know, so that was.
How long ago was that you had that done? Was that years and years ago?
It wasn't that long ago, actually. When I was looking into it, it was actually only a few years ago, five years ago, something like that.
Because now there are, so when I do photography, and at some point I would find a lovely long view of some horizon or other, and I would go, I wish I could just have that panorama, but I didn't have a panorama camera. Mm-hmm. So what I would do is I would go click, 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 take all these pictures, and then go on the computer and stitch them together manually. And boy, that was a long time ago, but boy, that was tedious. Well, now, not only can you stand in one place, turn on panorama view on your camera and go, and there it is, it's done. You can also, which I found interesting and useful, is you can take an iPhone and set it up for a panorama view. And instead of just standing in one place and turning, you can actually walk along something. So you could take your dot, your 3 foot wide, whatever it is, put it on the floor, and then just start your camera at one end and walk it along or slide it along or whatever to the other end. And you would have a rectangular rendition that didn't have distortion. It's amazing.
Yeah. I remember looking at some of those as a solution to this project that I was looking to undertake. Another interesting thing about this picture is that that's actually a picture of downtown Houston. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of detail in there. And in fine print against every building is the name and address of that building, whatever building, you know, main street. In fine print, which you'll only see if you're standing, you know, within 2 feet of that picture. Mm-hmm. And so I experimented with some of those methods and they did a pretty good job. But if you're wanting it all to look and to see that detail, it was just a little bit tricky to get right, let alone and I wasn't able to unframe it. So you still got to deal with the lighting and the glare from the glass.
Right. And stuff. So. And that walk along rather than turn for panorama, that's something that has been improved greatly recently. And yes. So it's much better than it was. Yep. My brother, who was the technical photographer of the family, he went and he took pictures where he had like 24 photos. He had a rig, so he would put it in a certain place, take the photos, put it the next line, take it. So it was very mechanical and very precise. And then he would bring all those photos in, and he had a special program that would take them and seamlessly stitch them. Mm-hmm. And so each of those little tiny photos, when he took it, was very large, lots of pixels. He then had it professionally printed. And I can walk up to the one of the Grand Canyon, and you can see this whole Grand Canyon. If you walk up really close to it, you can see a tree on the far edge. A tree. I mean, it's that fine a print. Just astonishing. But then, you know, that's what he did. That's what he loved. And so he figured out a way to make it happen. It would be really too costly for me to do, because I'm just not into the tech stuff. But he was an excellent photographer.
Yeah. I mean, of course, that technology evolves all the time, and a lot of those things just get either cheaper or smaller or faster or all those things. But yeah.
You can have it fast or cheap or good. Pick two.
Right.
Yeah. Well, is there anything you would like to leave our listeners with? Any last thoughts? We're getting near the end of the hour.
All right. I mean, I guess we've talked about different things, from technology to just life in general and our experiences. And that's if I had a message to give anybody, it's really about, I think I'm excited, and I think I mean, the community of people is excited about trying to let those things blend together in a sort of organic way. And I think that some of the technologies that we've found ourselves with will actually help us I think they've helped us through where we've got to so far, but I think they will help us into a bright future. So I think that's kind of my message, it's using what we have in the best way possible.
Thanks for that, Rupert. It was really good talking to you today. I'm really glad that you came on. My guest today has been Rupert McCrae from Dallas, Texas, and the UK. You got to put that in there with his accent. Okay. Thanks, Rupert.
Thank you. Yeah. Thanks, Lewis. Thanks for having me on. I really enjoyed being here with you and having a chance to connect on your show.
You are listening to KDRT LP 95.7 here in Davis, California.